Hi, hello, and welcome to the Deep Track Podcast. We've got a special episode of the podcast. We are in Geneva. I am in the hotel lobby. This is Hotel Envy. I'm with a special guest, my friend Bilal Khan. Bilal, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing surprisingly well for having a few days of like constant on my feet, sometimes strange food, sometimes no food, very little water, and a lot of champagne.
It's about it's been about 3 or 4 days of just nonstop walking around, appointments, taking photos, drinking espresso.
It's true.
And
yes.
Ending up at the Hotel Envy lobby.
Yes.
Which you have to see to truly experience.
This is a very interesting setting that we're in. A lot of what style would you call this lobby?
Acid trip.
Acid trip is a good
chalet
way to put it. Yes. As a trip chalet, yes. Let's go with that. So we are just at the tail end of Watches and Wonders 2024. We've been meeting with all of the brands, exhibiting brands, almost 60 brands. 54 brands here exhibiting this year. I did not meet with all 54 brands, Bilal. Did you?
I think I met with 20-something. Okay. There were a lot of indies and smaller brands that, you know, I just could not squeeze in, and then there were maybe a couple dozen others that were in town.
Yes, so Watches and Wonders is a week that, of course, the big show, the main show, is at the Plexpo just by the airport, the 54 brands. But there's a lot more going on in Geneva during this week. There's a lot of brands in the Beau Rivage. In particular, I went over and met with Baltic and said hi to Andrea from Furlan Mari and all those guys. And then there's also Time to Watches.
Right,
which has its own slate of brands. I think there's even another one with some other brands. So it can certainly keep you on your toes. There's a lot going on this week.
Yeah, Time to Watch It is more of a indie kind of show.
Yes, the big draw there, I think, is Zin.
Zin
for people to go see, and maybe who's that brand? That Emmanuel M. Chaz, Colloquium.
Yes,
his new brand.
Yeah,
Louis Erard.
Yes, they're there.
That's what was
Ellen looting. Silberstein is known to hang out there as well. I saw him 2 years ago when I went.
Yes, I saw him today in the Beau. These are the kinds of people that are just kind of milling about here. I think the AHCI has an event going on that V&A Halter is known to hang out at, very accessible. So it's that kind of environment around here. The watch world kind of takes over this city, which I suppose it's used to.
Even more so. Usual.
The people, the locals, the people that work here seem apathetic. I don't know what word you'd use.
They're used to it. It's a bunch of... Well, all the American press stays at this one hotel, so I think the staff here is quite used to, 11 p.m., the brand dinners are over. You've got about 30, American press people just hanging out in here.
Yeah. Trying to get work done.
Yeah. Pretending to get work done.
Yes.
Some actually getting work done.
Yeah. It's a scene here, as they say. Bilal, maybe give us just a quick introduction of who you are for people who might not be aware.
Yeah. I've been in the watch media space for about 10 years now. I started at A Blog to Watch. I was there for 6-7 years. Now I am with Watch Time magazine, which you may know from the show that we have in Manhattan every year. General watch nerd turned enthusiast turned professional,
Yeah. And you are a noted Chopard enthusiast as well.
I do love Chopard.
Yes. So what are you wearing on your wrist right now?
I'm wearing the Chopard LUC Quattro 1618-63 in white gold, which is the first of their Quattro movements.
Yeah.
Next year will be the 25th anniversary, so I think there's going to be some special pieces.
Yeah.
Which I anticipate will make my watch go up in value.
Ah, okay. Playing the long game.
I'm kidding,
as
of
ever.
Course. I buy watches for my love and passion, of course. They're not investments.
Well, absolutely. But I think the, to your point, I think some of these watches, some of the LUC watches that they produce, represent a huge amount of value right now. And these are watches that can be had on the secondhand market for relatively reasonable prices, yeah. And I know a few of the watches you have in your collection qualify as this as well, and they're exceptionally interesting watches and beautiful watches that have just not, for one reason or another, caught the mainstream or whatever you want to call it. So therefore, they can be had for a reasonable price.
Yeah. And speaking of Chopard, you know, they had 2 years in a row, I think, of pretty good stuff coming out of the show. They had this titanium skeletonized Alpine Eagle that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's just fantastic. Incredible.
So leading into the show, I was really feeling that, like, titanium was having a bit of a moment that we're going to see more. A lot of these kind of, you know, higher end premium sport watches are starting to be released in titanium. Gerard Perregaux, for instance.
Vacheron
Constantin got into the titanium game.
With the tourbillon.
With the tourbillon. It was very unexpected. I picked it up thinking, oh, it's platinum. And then
I had the exact same feeling.
Nothing,
I was like,
weighed nothing. in hindsight, though, you know, I don't know if I'd say it was like, oh, we saw titanium everywhere, but it was certainly like present in more ways than I feel like we've experienced it in the past.
I think we're going to see more and more of it. I think people have become more educated on it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you think back to even 2015 when the snowflake was like a thing, and people who were just getting into watches were like, this feels cheap, this feels light. It was,
it's an odd feeling, coming from a precious metal watch or steel watch or something like that. And I think, and I'm glad you brought up the snowflake too, because Grand Seiko this year, they have a new colorway of their GMT chronograph that they brought out, which has kind of a, I don't want to say awkward, it's certainly an unusual case, very geometric, very angular. It's large though, it's like 44.5 millimeters. But it's their super titanium, I think they call it, in the case and the bracelet, and it's the same experience as the snowflake. Maybe not quite as light, but it's exceptionally light. And I like this, that it kind of flips that, like, oh, I couldn't wear that, or it kind of like pulls the rug out from under the, well, these are the numbers that fit well on my wrist, because it doesn't always come down to that. And I think that you can take a watch like this that is ostensibly, from the look of it, kind of, oh, I couldn't wear that, or I couldn't pull that off if you just see it in front of you. But you put it on, and its wearability is fine, and the weight is fine, so it feels like any other watch that you put on, you know?
Absolutely.
Do you like titanium watches?
I prefer it. It is a superior metal to steel in every single way.
Okay. So you're not bothered by the lightweight?
Oh, no. I love the lightweight.
You love the lightweight, yeah. Yeah.
If I want weight on my wrist, it's got to be gold or platinum. Steel is basically at the bottom of my personal
the
list.
The lowest rung.
Yes.
Of
yes.
Well, on that note, I'm wearing a steel Zenith flyback rainbow from 97, which is a watch I like quite a bit. I wore it to my Zenith meeting this year. They had some interesting releases. They released a dive watch.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time.
A really cool one, which kind of has the color that you have on your dial somewhat.
It's colorful.
Orange.
There's some pops.
Some blue.
Pops. I said pops. It's got some, you know, some hits of orange on there. I've been waiting for a dive watch from Zenith for a long time, and it's something that they haven't really done. But, of course, they have some really cool, funky dive watches in their history. And they do a really good job of representing their past with these revival models, these heritage models that are almost one-to-one recreations of some of their past that we've seen them doing over the past few years. But then they also balance that out by doing, like, modern interpretations of them as well. And they did that this year with the DeFi Extreme Diver.
Everyone loved it.
Which is cool.
It kind of came out of nowhere.
It should be titanium, though.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's just... Yes.
Or platinum.
Yeah. But, you know... It really did come out of nowhere. I don't think anyone was expecting it, and it was kind of a hit. Everyone was kind of talking about it, and I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of those on people's wrists.
I think so, too. I'm curious. I'm thinking about ways that I can move one into my collection currently. I like funky divers with a lot of personality, and this is a diver with a lot of personality. Yeah. So
how much was it? Do you
11.7, 11.4, in that range, right. Which feels like a new default price.
Yeah.
Honestly, for like
it's a bit more than a sub.
Brands in that range, like coming out with new watches, like, oh, Oh, and it's only $11,000.
Yeah.
Like, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, I mean, it's in that LVMH tier, sub Hublot, above Tag, yeah, in that price area, you know? Mm-hmm. Even though Tag released a $135,000 split seconds chronograph this year, so.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. But I personally enjoy going to these brands because you see things that are a little bit kind of out of the mold of everything else that you see. And throughout the year, we see a lot of kind of traditionally styled divers released, and there's, you know, nothing wrong with them, and there's a lot of good-looking ones and fine, but this doesn't feel... I like seeing watches that feel like they don't really adhere to kind of the preconceived notions of the genres that they're trying to tap into.
For sure.
I guess. So I guess that's why Chopard kind of just kind of lives above that, maybe, huh?
I mean, they just... can't do any wrong for 2 years in a row. Yeah. They really truly have like understood what people want.
Yeah,
their Qualité Fleurier watch is stunning. It's kind of got a monochrome dial, and that's beautiful movement. Everyone who saw it loved it. The forest green watch that they had is stunning. God, what else did they have? I mean, we have just left the show maybe an hour and a half ago, so we have seen so many watches over the course of the past 72 hours.
Yeah, it's a lot to digest and process, and there's a lot that I think is slipping through the cracks right now, certainly when I think back.
Yeah, there's some bigger brands than Chopard and Zenith.
Really?
The show, have you heard of
them?
Well,
let's see here. All right. If you'd have told me before the show started that Rolex would release a solid gold deep sea before a titanium one, you know, I would have said, I don't know about that. But
I would have believed it because I don't think they're going to do a titanium watch 2 years in a row because it's kind of set an expectation.
Yeah, I suppose. I had that expectation that they would because a single Yachtmaster felt like a...
Yeah.
Well, that's an odd use of it. Like, of course, like a deep sea, well, a Sea Dweller, a Sea Dweller 483, I think would be fabulous in titanium. And you're probably smarter than I am when it comes to this, making these predictions. But I thought that we would see more use of it. That it would start to kind of slowly make its way into some of the other
collections. I think maybe in 2 years we'll see something. Mm-hmm. You know, people love doing these prediction posts every year with Rolex, and they are 100% in totality always completely wrong.
It's the one thing we can rely on.
Yes. What you won't see is what any prediction post says.
Yeah. That's true. That's why I only do them in podcast form and just treat it more as a joke of what would be the most ridiculous thing to see. I thought we'd also see some new 1908s with maybe a complicated 1908 or something like that. And of course, we got a new 1908, but it's in platinum and it has a guilloché blue dial, which is reserved for platinum when it comes to Rolex watches. What did you think of the 1908?
I think it's really nice. It's a it looks like a Atelier win, though. Someone commented, I posted a macro shot of that dial, and someone shared that story with a side-by-side of the Atelier win dial.
Yeah.
And I gotta say...
It was right there?
It looked a whole lot like it, you know, kind of stamped. But the color of the dial is stunning.
Yeah.
The 1908 is still one of those watches that it's going to take a couple of years for people to really get like what this watch is.
Yeah.
Because they have what is the emblematic dress watch already.
Yeah.
The Datejust is the dress watch people get. So to have a dressier dress watch, it's going to take some time for it to really sink in for people.
And did people ever really understand the Cellini collection? Before that, you know, I think the average person that wanted a sub would be like, the what collection?
Yeah.
You know?
And so, with those prices, people go for the Calatrava or a Patrimony or, you know, there's a lot of options for dressy dress watches.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Were you a fan of the 1908 when it came out last year?
No.
Oh, really? But you like the new one better, or
like
are you still not quite a fan?
I like the color.
Okay. you would get something non-Rolex in this price range, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I don't think I would go for the 1908 if I was looking for a platinum dress watch.
A platinum dress watch, yeah.
With a guilloche dial.
Yeah, that's true. It could be choppy territory.
Yeah, there's a lot of competition from the indies in that territory.
Yeah.
A lot.
Your money can go a long way in that realm. There was another watch, too, that I was thinking from Patek Philippe that kind of surprised me. And they had a couple of pretty cool releases. Of course, the 5164 coming in white gold and the denim strap. Can we call this the Jay Leno?
I think we can.
The Canadian tuxedo.
It
looks like Justin Timberlake showing up MTV Music Awards with Britney Spears in 1990, whatever.
I was expecting it to maybe not be quite so much like straight up a pair of jeans cut up, but that's really what it looks like. I mean, it feels great because it's calfskin and, it's treated, but it looks like a denim strap on a white gold.
It's the chronograph, Nautilus.
It's a chronograph Nautilus, yes. Yeah.
The reference slips my mind at the moment.
5980?
5980. And then the 5164 in white gold, which is, of course, also a Nautilus. And then the new Aquanaut.
Yeah.
In rose gold with a quartz movement. It's a dual time.
Yes.
It says home on the bottom of the dial.
Right.
It's got the grenade texture.
Right.
I kind of like that.
Honestly, so what you have to understand with Patek is... they do a photography session at the end of the day where you basically get about 20 press members around a big circular table, and you all take turns taking pictures
with light
of the
boxes,
watches.
Yeah. That are kind of set throughout the room.
And you kind of have to go to what's grabbing your attention first.
Yeah.
The golden ellipse with the new bracelet is... beautiful. I think it was my favorite of their pieces.
Oh, really?
This year. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that is an underrated watch.
Yes, the golden ellipse. And on the bracelet, it's kind of a brick road, beads of rice style bracelet.
Yeah,
okay.
With a really nice clasp. Beautiful. Like, it's my pick from them this year, even though it's not innovative or anything. I mean, this whole year is not about innovation. This is
certainly
iteration, color, material.
Yeah. And it's okay, right? Like, or what are your feelings? Like, are you expecting every week when you come to this to see, like...
No, absolutely not. You know, we had the pandemic where for 2 years we kind of had, like, these... What was the word that was used for half online, half in-person shows that they had?
Oh, gosh. Yes.
Fidgetal.
Yes.
It was a fidgetal show.
Yes. Physical-digital mashup. Yes.
And so then we had the first Watch of the Wonders afterwards, which was just a spectacle because everyone's back. And then we had the year of the puzzle emoji Rolex.
The puzzle emoji Rolex.
And now we've got kind of a normal year.
Yeah.
Where we don't need to have, you know, something crazy.
Yeah, a lot of fleshing out of existing collections.
Mm-hmm.
There's one brand that kind of relaunched or reintroduced or reinvented a collection that had existed since the brand was launched in 1996 from Parmigiani Fleurier. The collection is the Toric. And it's interesting, you know, I think this is a lot of the Parmigiani Fleurier watches from the 90s are kind of a victim of being launched in that era, where they very much look that era. And
yes.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. They, you know, maybe not aged as gracefully as some other designs as we would maybe interpret now.
Yes. A lot of them, the older versions, are something someone with a monocle would wear to the opera.
Yes.
This new one has a really fresh, like, light sage matte dial.
Yes.
Stunning movement.
The new collections are gorgeous.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's enough distance between the new Toric collection and the Tonda collection? I know they pitched the Tonda as, like, this kind of sporty... It feels like a nice more formal or halfway to formal watch. Like, do you think that these two watches will be competing for the same buyer from the same brand?
I think you are probably going to have people who own both of these.
Yeah.
I think there we might start seeing the Parmigiani guy. As a thing since Guido took over. Mm. You know, it's a totally different brand.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what's up? That's Oren Hartsoff, the one and only. That's all right. You can say hi, Oren.
So I didn't realize you were recording this.
No, it's all right. What was your favorite watch from the show, dude?
Hello. I like the Black Bay 58 GMT. I just don't like the bezel color. I want a different color, but I love the watch.
You're for gilt, though, overall? You just didn't like how it was done on the bezel?
I am for gilt. I just felt that the gilt, the typeface, and the Coke were too much together.
Too much together? That's kind of my take on that as well. That's a good take. That's a good take, Oren.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. We'll credit you in the... you know, in the show notes. Where do you fall on that one, Bilal?
I am ambivalent.
Okay.
My deep, dark secret is my ambivalence towards Tudor.
Yeah.
And I feel awful saying that because one of our friends, who is about 25 feet away from us...
yes.
Quite possibly is a very high-level Tudor employee.
Maybe.
But he, you know, he won't take it personally. But they had other stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. The monochrome Black Bay 41.
Those were cool.
And that's, you know, kind of basic.
Going back to the GMT, they're giving the people what they want. They are going to sell a metric shit ton of these watches. Every college student who's graduating is going to get one of these.
Is going to get one of these, yeah.
39 millimeters. That watch is going to last forever. It looks cool. It's. I get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
I like that they made the movement. And I'm excited to see what they might end up doing with this movement moving ahead.
Yeah.
Basically. Is my stance on it. I'm kind of with Oren there. I'm not a huge fan of the colors that they brought out there on the bezel. And I'm also... not generally overly fond of some of the gilt treatments. And the reaction to this watch, I think, is telling to me that maybe the manufactured old look that we've been seeing over the past 10 years is maybe on the downswing.
Yeah. And a certain segment of the population has always had some contempt for the Fotina gilt.
Yes.
You know.
It's definitely ruffled a lot of feathers along the way.
Yeah.
And now I think, but this is like the most that I'm hearing
about. It does look kind of nice, though, because they didn't go too far with it. It's like, I don't think they went, you know.
You know what watch I think does it well is the Black Bay Pro with those like loom blocks, but the blocks themselves are, like, they don't look like it's trying to be old, but they have this kind of just yellowish nature to them, or barely eggshell or something like that.
It's a little faded.
Yes.
It's just like a little aged.
I think a Black Bay Pro with this movement would be tops.
Yeah.
Personally. I like that kind of stuff. I don't know. Let's talk about Bremont.
I think we have to.
We have
to. The Terra Nova.
Bremont had something of a relaunch of their brand this year.
Yeah.
They've refreshed... their positioning, I guess I would say.
Well, yes. And to put into context, they hired Davide.
Yeah, Davide Serrato.
Yes. Formerly of HYT and then previously of Mont Blanc and previously of Tudor.
Tudor, who presided over
the Black Bay.
The release of the Black Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they
very sharply dressed man.
He is a very sharply dressed man.
Mm-hmm.
Always in... a double-breasted
tan
suit.
Yep. Always has been this way. I remember walking into that meeting in 2012 when the Black Bay was released and seeing him and being like, what is this guy about?
Yeah.
This is I'm very intimidated by how this man is dressed right
now. He's got a wild resume. Like, how did HYT get in there? We don't have to talk about it, but it's just like, sure.
Yeah. Okay,
sure.
We'll go with it.
Yeah, but the new collection, the Terra Nova.
Yeah.
It's four watches. You got the 38 millimeter time only.
Yeah.
The 40.5 millimeter time only. The bi-directional bezel with the power reserve.
Yeah.
And then the chronograph.
And these are all positioned at slightly more accessible pricing.
They start
have a whole
at $2,800.
New design language, pretty much, that they're introducing here. There are no triptych cases here or gussied up movements. These are pretty straightforward
Solita
watches.
Movements.
Solita movements.
All the indices, they're done in loom. It's got very strong loom.
All the loom.
There's a lot of loom on it.
Yeah.
Some people are saying that the cushion shape makes it look like a Kickstarter brand or a micro brand, which I don't understand because I don't think a micro brand has a, you know, monopoly on a cushion case.
And also, like, is that meant to be an insult?
Apparently.
Like, there's some creative, cool stuff happening in the micro brand space and the independent space.
Yes.
So.
Personally,
like, there's nothing wrong with that inherently.
Yeah. Personally, I think that the brand has tended to get a bit more heat than it has coming.
This has been a very controversial year for them, like, surprisingly. So I don't know if they anticipated
it. And it's their first year at the show.
And it's their first year at the show.
And it's the first brand you see when you walk in.
It's the first thing you see when you walk
in. Giant Bremont with a new logo that's a compass with a propeller.
Yeah.
With something else that I'm forgetting now, because it's three things combined into
all
one.
All put together, that is the messaging of their new branding.
Yeah,
it's unexpected, that's for sure. And it's so they've rejiggered the entrance to the show this year, which I don't know about you, it threw me off like a bit, because they're taking advantage of the upper section, which I don't believe they have in the past. So the press lounge is now in this upstairs area. When I first walked in, we went up there. I thought, oh, I'm totally lost. I don't know what's going on here. And but then you go down the steps, and it's more or less the same that it has been.
I gotta say, I loved it.
But Bremont is up there. They're like the sole booth up there in the entryway in this massive. It's the first thing you see when you all walk in, and it's an impressive showing for first coming in. You usually expect them to be in those kind of smaller tucked away areas.
The carré,
yes. And there was one of those upstairs, and that's where like Nomos was and Norcane. It was their first year as well.
Right.
That's kind of what I was expecting.
Right.
They
went big. They wanted to be right there.
Yeah, they're swinging.
They
for
made
the
a statement for sure.
Yeah, and so you think they're getting some unfair treatment then, and how people are kind of talking about? And I mentioned this to you earlier, like. But probably half a dozen people have come to me asking, what do you think of the new Bremont? What do you think of that brand? Isn't it terrible? Aren't you offended? You know? Yeah. It's not that offensive.
It's not offensive at all. It's actually quite nice looking.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why such a strong emotion is evoked. It's drastic, but sometimes, like, I respect a bold move.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, why not? Shake things up.
Why not? And look, and at the end of the day, like, these are tool watches that are meant to be going into wherever, the tops of mountains and all that kind of stuff. So, like, it doesn't have to be the most elegant, beautiful thing in the world, right?
Yes. And it's going to take some months to years to see how these watches actually perform. People are going to buy them. We're going to hear stories about how they are. You know, we just saw the product in its, you know, first form.
Yeah.
Not, like, there are no first-hand stories about it. Nobody has any, you know, time with it.
It's in its infancy.
Let's give them a chance is what I'm saying.
I'm down with that. Let's give them a chance and see what they can do. They've got some big ideas, I think, that they've executed pretty well in the past. They're capable of doing some pretty cool stuff, so let's let it ride and see what happens.
Yeah.
On the other end of the spectrum, there's another couple of... there's one final thing I wanted to ask you about, and that's these thin watches that were released this year. Piaget released a new Altiplano Tourbillon that is 2 millimeters thick on... the whole thing is 2 millimeters thick. The movement itself is, you know, 1.4 or something like that. And Bulgari had another record-breaking watch, Octo Finissimo
Ultra.
Yeah, I did not get to see the Bulgari watch. Did you get to see this?
No. Okay. I unfortunately did not because
they exhibit somewhere else.
Are one of the brand who are at the Beau Rivage. Many of our colleagues got to see it. I did not. Personally, I think a 2 millimeter thick watch with a tourbillon is considerably more impressive to me than a time-only watch that's 1.7 millimeters thick.
Yes.
No hate to Bulgari. Love Bulgari. You know, love the Octo.
They're both immensely impressive.
They
and very thin.
Richard Mille, fine, great, excellent. But Piaget deserves their love too here.
What about Hublot, that Ferrari watch? How thin was that? I'll have to put this in the show notes.
That's a great question.
Because that was exceptionally thin as well.
But
slightly different form factor,
Richard
obviously.
Richard Mille
but
did beat that watch's thinness, I'm fairly sure.
Okay.
Though Richard Mille held the record until the Ultra.
So this is going to be just like shaving tenths of millimeters off.
At a certain point, it's a potato chip on the wrist.
Yes.
Cool, I suppose. But like, you know, world record. We hear this word constantly. Yeah. World record. Maybe let's try some other world records.
Is that something though? Like, because I feel like if I'm a consumer and I'm looking at an ultra thin watch, and I like one, but that other one has the world record, like, that's not what's going to push me over to it.
Absolutely,
I'm still going to like the one that I like.
Yeah.
Like the Piaget Altiplano is, it's beautiful.
It is.
I'm a low-key, pretty big fan of the Altiplano collection as a whole. I think it's a beautiful watch.
Yeah.
This one, I mean, it's extreme. And this was highlighted when I asked how you wind it. And this, you know, opened up a whole process of, kind of struggling to pull this crown out, and there's a whole mechanism, like a little, I don't know, pen-shaped little thing that you have to kind of hook to the side of the case, and then you can wind on the end of it so you don't damage anything.
These are
that made me a little like, oh, that's...
Well, these are kind of common now. The Hublot Murakami watch has a USB-powered... pen winding system that attach. I mean, that's of course I think a $400,000-$500,000 watch well. I love a crazy winding system, so.
So it doesn't bother you.
No.
So, but in the same breath, you know, she's like, "Well, it's water resistant to 2 atmospheres, and you know, so you can take it and do things."
You can go for a swim with your 2 millimeter thin tourbillon.
My issue was like, if you overflexed your wrist or something, that it would bend the movement or push the gears out of alignment or something like that.
Well, here's the thing: I assume, and certainly hope, tolerance tests have been done before they put this product out.
Yes.
If it turns out that any of these brands have not done that, it will be egg on their face.
Yes. And we might never hear about it because it's not just like random Joe's buying these watches.
Yeah. But I have a feeling that they must have thought about this.
They do have a patent on the tourbillon cage with how it's like secured into the plate of the movement or something like that. So, you know, maybe that accounts for some of it. I got some videos of these watches as well that I'll post on the D-Track soon, so keep an eye out for that. I don't know. These are, like, fall into disconcerting territory for me. 5 or 6 millimeters thin? That's great.
Yeah.
I'm fine at that point. And that's, you know, the regular Altiplano collection is like that. Zach Blass has a really beautiful Altiplano.
Yes, he does. He has a beautiful Altiplano.
So, and I'll link to some of this stuff below. If you haven't checked these watches out, you absolutely should. I'm a pretty big fan of Piaget as well. I think they capture kind of a look of an era, like really effortlessly. And of course, they did the Polo 79 thing, the solid gold Polo that kind of brings back the original design from 1979. That was kind of a definitive look from the 80s. That is also very much of its era. That's kind of having a moment as well right now. I think that's really nicely done. You know, I don't know if would it make sense to see it in steel or titanium or some other material or something. To me, it's kind of like quintessentially this piece of gold.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it work.
Maybe in a couple of years. Like with the 222 from Vacheron, you know, people are like, this is going to be, it's not going to happen for
a while. Yes. You know. And of course, we have not seen any other iterations of the 222.
No.
From
Vashon, although they did do a beautiful green take on each of their overseas watches.
Yes. Yeah.
In red gold.
The overseas collection got. I think there was four of them.
Yeah.
And of course, the 222 is a predecessor to the overseas collection. So it wouldn't really make sense to bring that and build that out as its own new collection alongside. But the overseas collection, of course, is well understood and pretty well fleshed out. Yeah. And they brought out these new colorways this year that work.
I prefer as well as to the blue. Think.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Okay. I always found the blue to be a little too bright.
Yeah.
This green is so deep and subtle. And with the gold, it just goes so well. It looks so classy, which is a word I do not use.
It's true. I know Bala. He does not use that word lightly. And these watches look fantastic. I've also got some pictures and videos of these that will go up soon. So keep an eye out for those. Bala, what's the best... did you have any food that you liked in the hall this year? The food situation is always a little weird.
I mean, these little sandwiches and...
and the little bowls of food, right?
Gyoza is always good.
Gyozas, yeah.
Unfortunately, this year I was not able to have any gyoza.
Oh.
Because what happens is when you're making these meetings that are now increasingly becoming 30-minute meetings instead of an hour or 45 minutes... you got to go back to back to back. So you don't really have time for soup and gyoza and white wine if you're in press. If you're a retailer.
Yeah, they do the whole three courses. And the.
They have it made.
Yeah. What are we doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we need to kind of change up.
I'd be a terrible salesperson, but I do it for the meals.
I think you could pull it off.
You could pull it off.
I think
you
could pull it off.
I had the press lounge was this one consolidated big press lounge this year, and they always had food that was kind of available, which I appreciated, because if you have meetings that go from like 12 to 2 or something, then that's your time frame that's gone for lunch.
So what did you think of the new press lounge? I heard a mixed reaction. Some people said it's too far away, I don't like it. I think those people are crazy.
It was very nice.
It was big.
Like, it was big. Fit. I always had space. I was always able to find a table or a little spot to tuck away. You know what I ended up using is that lounge, or the lab space. So I shot some videos in there. There's some weird random spaces here in this hall that are kind of tucked away that you can find space to create your content or do whatever, right?
Yeah, they could have done a better job explaining what the lab is.
The lab? I still don't know what it was.
I think I saw a 3D printer, possibly.
I saw somebody walking around with an Apple Vision Pro headset in there.
That was me.
Obviously,
yes.
Kidding. You're you don't have one of those on order?
Not yet.
Below?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you should come by the time I get home.
Okay. Next time I see you, I expect to see a approximation of your eyes through the Apple Vision Pro. All right. Favorite thing you saw this week?
The Cartier Santos Rewind, which is such an outrageously hilarious and yet beautiful carnelian dial. Watch, manual wind. They took the 230 MC manual wind movement and just inverted it.
Yeah.
So 11 o'clock is 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
10 o'clock is 2 o'clock. You just read the time backwards. It's a
and
counterclockwise.
Hands run backwards.
Yeah, it's a counterclockwise watch.
Yeah.
And I think that is such an absurd concept that I would buy one, but they are limited to 20 pieces, and they are platinum.
Yeah,
and
a lot of platinum this year.
Yeah. I mean, Cartier also had, I think, something like 40 novelties.
They bring a lot of watches.
The Tortue Mono Pusher.
The Tortue was beautiful, and there's also the time only Tortue as well that were quite nice.
And a watch I thought people would talk about more is the Santos Dual Time. Did you see this one?
Yeah, it was a little big.
It's the big Santos on the bracelet. It's like the big XL, they call
it. And they put it in the box next to these smaller ones. So it looks like a... a tank mm-hmm. in there compared, mm-hmm. not a Cartier tank, like a literal tank.
Yeah, no, it's a big boy.
In there, yeah.
But I liked it. I liked
it. You liked it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. When I was in that meeting, I asked them, well, this feels like kind of a random thing. You know, what's going on here? Why did you decide to do this? And their answer really surprised me. They were like, well, some of our like better customers had requested it. Enough of them had requested it often enough that we just thought we'd make a production version.
The large.
I want to meet these people that were requesting this.
It's quite popular. I like to watch what people are wearing on the shuttle that goes from the hotel to the show.
Yep.
And I see quite a few AP Royal Oaks mm-hmm. and many large Santoses.
Santos, very popular watch.
The big one, too.
Cartier in general is having like a, like a, oh, if you're cool, you got to have a, a Cartier. I don't own a Cartier. I'm not a very cool person, though, as well. So, do you own a Cartier?
Yes, I have a Santos Dumont. They did a limited edition, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. It is the only one that has Arabic numerals instead of the Roman numerals.
Yeah,
and it's got a guilloche center on the dial in copper and the red font. Beautiful watch. Naturally, I tried to change the strap and broke a few little parts in there that I haven't managed to fix yet. Love the watch. It's doing great in my safe.
Yep.
I just need to get it, you know,
looked at,
all checked out. But a Santos Dumont is just, you know, iconic dress watch.
Yeah, my wife wears a Santos almost every day. She's much cooler than
my
me.
Fiance
she has a two-tone Santos.
Santos. Galbi. Two-tone Santos Galbi.
Yep, that's exactly the same. Yep.
Her mother gave it to her, and her mother got a Serpenti, which, you know, iconic as well. Like, just...
Yes, I love the Serpenti.
There were no new Serpentis at Bulgari, were there?
I didn't see any. Go,
yeah. Didn't hear about
My
it.
My wife also loves the Serpenti.
I mean, I love the Serpenti.
It's a very cool... It's a unique experience to in person.
Yeah.
Like, how it flexes, how it moves, how it kind of defies any logic. Well... Yeah,
I think you have to say what your favorite watch was. Have you not?
I mean, my favorite watch, I think the one that I would actually own and buy is that DeFi Extreme Diver.
Yeah,
because I'm like that.
A lot of people have said this. Yeah. Ed Ree, our friend Ed Ree from A Blog to Watch.
Shout out to Ed Ree.
Yep. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Ed Ree and I have a pretty similar taste. We own a few of the same watches. And a fantastic guy as well. I'll put a link to his Instagram down below, as well as yours, Bilal. I can't thank you enough for joining me to do this podcast. Bilal, thank you.
Happy
and I hope you're able
here.
To get some rest. And congratulations on your impending nuptials.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Now it's out there for the world.
Everyone knows that.
Everyone knows. Yeah. Go send this man a gift or go send him a congratulations on Instagram.
His address is going to be in the show notes.
Yes, his address in the show notes. He'd love it if you showed up at his house with a casserole or something like that.
I'll take a casserole.
Yeah, always. Mm. All right. Bilal, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Talk soon, guys.
All right. That will do it for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll have a lot more content coming from Watches and Wonders 2024. Keep an eye out for that coming soon. Until next time, take care.